Yeah, it's my pleasure to use the next 45 minutes to share with you how we think about the, particularly from now on, what's the co-evolution of the AI and the human intelligence. Actually, today I just learned a word from Korea, this co-evolution. I like the word 共进化. So that's the really the true essence of this co-evolution. So AI today is really just popular, sometimes too popular. I think every day, I cannot imagine there's a day I have not read any new article talking about AI before I went to bed. Even the government, like what the White House just do a special session and report on AI. And then but what is AI? There are a lot of hype, of course, but there are also a lot of real things, they're also real powerful. So let's look at I read some book. I don't claim I read many books. I read some book, and then this one particular book I really highly recommend it. And it's not by computer scientists. It's actually by a Nobel Prize lecturer. He actually winning the it's an economist. Winning the Nobel Prize in economy, and it's called Thinking Fast and Thinking Slow. I know many people probably read this book. If you have not, I really recommend. So what is the thinking fast and thinking slow? So let's use an example. So a lot of our perception, right, and also nowadays, we also do that, right? Recognize the dog, recognize the flower, recognize the cat. I think those things you almost can do in the reflection. That's obviously think fast. And there are something which is, you need to think a little bit slower. For some people, probably they can think fast, but for a lot of people, some people probably don't even know the answer, right? Is this a comedy or tragedy? And particularly for young people, I think nowadays, you ask this question, you say, who knows this movie, or if you know the answer? If you know the answer, you're probably too old, because this movie probably is done in the early 90s, and then probably many of the students in this audience probably is not even born yet, right? But I happen to be old enough to know this called Mask. And then you know the movie, and then you know it's comedy. You need to think kind of a little bit in order to come up with the answer. And of course, there are decisions in our life, and you don't make many, and then you really need to think slow. You think about the Satya, our CEO, thinking about whether we should actually acquire LinkedIn, and also how, when, how much should we pay for? And I think we just now in the process of finishing this acquisition, and it will come down in the history the biggest the acquisition in the high tech or software area. So this obviously you agree with me in this thing slow. So now let's look at how AI is going to tackle all this problem, right? So I kind of using the three examples, some the things we actually do in Microsoft Research, and kind of to illustrate my point. Okay. So first one. This is visual recognition. So this morning you heard Peter talk about deep residual net. Because of technology we invented, now we actually be able to actually be the number one in the image net contest. And not only that, I think nowadays people doing image, if they want the best performance, they all use the image net because this is something really works. Okay, and then with this technology, not only we can do the object recognition, we can also do the object detection, basically also tell you where the object is with the beautiful bounding box. And of course, the researcher continue push the envelope of the technology. Then now they also want to do the pixel level of segmentation, right? Because not just bounding box, tell you exactly the pixel, particularly for a lot of applications like a drone or autonomous driving, you really need that. Otherwise, you might actually hit something. And then that's the middle one called semantic segmentation. But semantic segmentation is actually, there's another step. Basically knowing there are different instances, like a person. There are two person there, and you need to know this is person one, person two. And there are two auto bike here. You need to know this is a bike one, there's a bike two. That's called instance segmentation. So there's a contest called COCO, instance segmentation contest. And then using the traditional convolutional network, which is the mainstream for doing image recognition, and there's something called score map. And you can imagine, using a score map, you are not going to solve this problem. You can identify there are person, but you really don't know they are actually how different they are. So this is why we come up with a technology called the kind of masking technology. So thinking about, I can actually use 9. Of course, you can use more. It's a trade-off between the accuracy and also the efficiency. So you simply just using 9 mask. So then you can have a top left, top middle, and top right. Same thing. You could then, and then based on that, you can see 2 different instances. It would be very rare for them to have the exactly same structure for all these 9 masks. So by doing so, we can really distinguish the instance from different instances. And with this technology, so we are able to win the COCO segmentation challenge this year, which is just out this month, in October, very fresh. So I think many industry, the player, which is very known doing a lot of AI, also participate, and we are very honored to actually get the first place. Now, we also beat ourselves. Our last year, we also number 1, but we also significantly improved this year. So now you can see, with this technology, we can do a complicated task like this with the pixel level of segmentation, also knowing there are the different instances. And then we also continue to improve this technology. Right now, in the lab, we already have an algorithm can do this in real time, so we can handle the video. And then with this technology, you can imagine we can empower many developers and to do intelligent application using computer vision. This is exactly what our goal is. And then here's another piece of the image technology. We combine computer vision and the natural language, and then to do image caption by actually not just recognize the object, actually give you the semantic description of what's in each picture. And again, with our latest technology, by doing embedding of the both the visual the feature from the train from DN with the natural language description, by doing the embedding, we are able to do the image caption and with very high accuracy. And then for the COCO image caption, we also get to the number 1 place. And then same thing for video. And for video, of course, they are not just the image information, also the time series information. So we need to process the video to capture those information, again, embedded with the natural language description to train the DN to be able to do the video caption. And again, in those contests, we also won the number 1 position. So with all this technology, we can provide, in Microsoft, we call Microsoft Cognitive Services, API. And this is exactly Microsoft's strategy. We say democratize AI. So at least for this kind of think fast task, perception task, cognitive side task, which can be done by thinking fast by human, we are able to build this API and then put on our cloud, Azure, we call it intelligent cloud, to empower any developer to build intelligent application. A lot of time, particularly our media friends, they might really give us enough credit because Microsoft, we actually, it's our gene and our history, we don't do a lot of end-to-end application. Instead, we are platform, we are enabler. So we have all this API on internet to empower our developer to build intelligent application, but we don't do the application ourselves. And this is because we believe this way we can actually make bigger impact in the society by empower hundreds, thousands, millions of developers to do that. In our Microsoft company services, we have a computer vision API. I introduced a couple technology just now. And of course, we have a speech API, we have natural language API, we have a knowledge API, we also have search API. And now, anyone can do an intelligent the application without invest deeply into the AI technology. At the same time, we also ship a couple apps. But the purpose is not doing an app. The purpose is using this app as a simple app to demonstrate how easy you can actually write an intelligent application. For instance, how old are they? today, probably still a lot of people don't know this is done by Microsoft. We kind of intentionally, we put the Howard down there as org, the not even putting under Microsoft domain name. And the purpose of Howard.net is not really shipping as app. It's a sample app. And guess what? The total app only have 8 lines of code. And the reason the 8 lines of code, you can actually write this because we have a cognitive service API. And of course, we never realized this can turn virus just within hours. And then there are billions of the photo be uploaded, and by now everyone all know about how old are they. And then this year we also do this CaptionBot.ai. Again, it's another sample app with less than 10 lines of code. You can imagine with the technology I just mentioned, the image caption technology, video caption technology, and this is just a couple examples. Anyone can try. You can upload any photo, and we are able to tell you what's in there. And then we hope very soon, we already did this technology in the lab, we are working around the clock to actually push the video caption as an API on our cognitive services. So now I finished the first sort of layer of AI, which by and large is the think fast task. Now let's look at the next one. I think will be a little bit, you need to think a little bit slow. That's the natural language conversation, which is to converse with the machine just using our natural language is always to be a dream. I'm also part of actually my professional career. I'm a speech and language guy. And by now, people also know we actually have this Xiao Eyes in Japan called Rina. And the chat bar has been always a very important technology to drive the AI, drive particular natural language. And I think also now, there's also Alexa, Microsoft called Cortana, and then also the Siri, Google Assistant. Their assistant focused on, which we call it IQ, more like to help people on finish their task. And that's called personal assistant. And then, but the Xiao Eyes, those kind of chat bar, we're trying to establish the emotional connection, which is trying to get into the EQ domain. And here is just example. We actually 2 years ago when we first launched Xiao Eyes, there's a reporter. He didn't believe like how can an artificial chat bar can really converse meaningful conversation. So he tried more than like an hour and a half, more than like 100 turns. He's still trying, and he found it so amazing. So he had to post this on the internet. So this is really the He just put it there. So people know about the Turing test, and I will also talk about Turing test later. Turing test itself is actually a very weak test. Presumably, you only need to fool 1/3 of the judge in order to say you pass the Turing test. We never really serious down Turing test on Xiao Eyes, but I can guarantee we probably already way past. Why? People know Xiao Eyes is an artificial chatbot. And still willing to spend so much time, I will tell you the number, to talk to it. And if it's not giving you some kind of meaningful or even emotional connection, I just don't know what it is, right? So here's the number. You're thinking about even human-human conversation, typically how many turns, a round trip turn, you do with your family, with your friends? 2 or 3, probably. And then Xiao Eyes today in both China and Japan, actually more than 20. And that's a lot, thinking about you actually perception, you actually have 20 round trip. And then now we already, particularly in China, Xiao Eyes is already fourth generation. Not only we can converse in natural language, we can also converse commenting on image and video with the technology I just talked about, combine both technology. And then we also doing a lot of emotion detection, knowing what the user's mood is, right? I mean, maybe you just a little bit down because something happened, or for student, tomorrow is a big exam. So the Xiao Eyes will try to do some certain thing to cheer you up, to make you more upbeat. And then we also start to partnering a lot with the in China, we call them official account or partner, like e-commerce site like JD, China Eastern Airline, in Japan, Lawson, those like a 7-Eleven type of stuff for customer assistance. So there are a lot of things we engage. And then also right now in the Shanghai, the live TV, Xiao Ai is reporting the weather. It's kind of functioning. The weather lady every day will tell you the weather, also tell you what things you really need to be aware before you go out the door. And then we also hope very soon we'll bring this type of capability to other parts of the world by providing a different language support. And then now I want to change the subject to the enterprise productivity. Microsoft, to improve the productivity for everyone, is actually one of the Microsoft strategy and mission. And then one of the tasks is the meeting scheduling. The meeting scheduling is such a task you really need to think a little bit slower because, I mean, you need, particularly you involve multi-party, you need to find a joint available time. And people might have their preference, right? And then also, you need to find a location, find the meeting room, which is available, et cetera, at least, right? And I think people who have a really personal assistant will know, a good assistant who work with you for many years will know your preference, and sometimes you even need to change your existing meeting to accommodate a higher priority one, right? So those things really not that easy. And then, so that's really something you cannot really think so fast yet. And the other thing also, a lot of time, not to mention, today, still human doing a lot of this. Even you're trying to build a bot to do it, where are the data coming from in the first place? If you don't have data, you need to start with human. And then, right now there are companies like XAI or Kura Lab, they actually do this for business. And what they do is initially, they try to build an automatic system. Initially, they just hire people. They even call them AI specialists. And their purpose, first of all, is give you the customer a reliable service and also using the data to build their system. So this is really a very interesting scenario of AI plus HI. I call it artificial intelligence plus human intelligence. Leverage each other, right? The co-evolution, right? And I think let me just show what I mean. So let's say we want to pass a request like this. Please schedule a meeting for my team on next Tuesday morning with Yong at the 13th floor. And then first, you need to do some basic text pre-processing by correct some typo. Then you need to pass the sentence into with so-called entity extraction, also the meaning extraction, by understanding your intent. So for instance, for a simple query like this, the schedule a meeting, you need to pass into, I know your intention is to schedule a meeting, and then you actually be associated with the correspondent entity type. Then you know a meeting need to at least attendee, time, and place. Then my team, you need to know what my team means, go into the Active Directory to find out the intense organization structure, what does my team mean, and pull the people in the meeting. And then with Yong, which in this reply, Yong probably not in your team, but they are in a company or in any university or in an organization, they could have multiple people called Yong. Not to mention, it could be either first name or last name, right? And then you kind of using some resolution to find the one probably have a meeting with you, either have a meeting with you all the time or the last Yong who just have a meeting with you. You pick a default on these people want to do differently, and then you pull that person into the meeting, in the attendee list. And of course, there are time and place. You also need to deal with that. So one thing of using AI, particularly current way, or all the statistical base or data-driven based AI, you very difficult to get 100%. I think it's very rare you hear someone say, I build the AI, never make mistake. I think it's unheard of. So that's a huge problem here. if you have something you cannot rely on then all the time, then you might not use it. Even just 10% of the time, you make a stupid mistake. And then the cost can be the disaster. So let's assume we can build a system with 90% successfully. You still have 10% failure. What would you do? Again, this is a great opportunity for AI plus HI. So there are systems now, and not to mention, if you're building any customer support system, you always need to back to the human to help you to do things. So when that happens, you just connect it to a human the representative to help you. And then one, you can finish the task. Second, depend on how he or she finishes the task, you can collect the data, collect the behavior. Now we have all this machine learning technology, reinforced learning. There's a plenty of opportunity we can use this to help us to deal with those kind of cases next time by doing more automation. And then more you do, the system become more automated, and you can scale the service. This is exactly right now has a lot of the startup, also including Microsoft. As you can see, we have Office 365. We also actively working on this to actually provide dependable services for meeting scheduling. So we actually show some early form of this demo in the Build conference earlier this year in Satya's keynote. So here's some quick example. So let's say you say schedule a meeting with Mu on Shanghai GGW tomorrow, and then the system cannot understand what Shanghai GGW is. So you will actually hand this task to a human. So we also need to build, this is the opportunity for AI and the HI work together. You also build the software for human. So when they go to human has already all the history, everything in a structural form. And a human will also, you actually a selection of the so-called dialogue choice the human can ask. And if it is one of them, you just click and go. Of course, you can also type in a completely new dialogue term. And then once they reply, and then the user respond, and then in this case, you actually the human to provide official name of the conference room of the meeting place, and the user respond, and then the system get it and fill the slot and goes on next question. And like I say, not only finish the task, all this can be remembered, the how human handle this in terms of dialogue flow, in terms of how they resolve the ambiguity, and these things are the data can get trained to the system, make the system more automatic. So the second thing is like something you need to think slower. I showed you an example how AI and HI can play together. And next one, in all the big data analysis, I would say this is the area, it's a perfect example, like all this AI will provide user some insight, some clue, and the user decide what to do next. That has been really the most the promising area of the big data, and particularly for this think slow problem task, which are many, also very important. So to illustrate my point, here is some real public data, the global shark attack data, which has the information about the year, the country, the type, fatality, etc. And then we, in research, this year we're very proud to release work in Microsoft, our data visualization and big data analysis software called Power BI. We released something called Automatic Insight Discovery. What is this? So when you have a big data set, so we use the AI technology to automatically mine possible insight in the area of the trend. People like to know trend, outlier, seasonality, all this stuff. We actually trying to automatically discover and the service to you, and also give you the best description we can come up with using some natural language generation technology. And hopefully, some of this will stimulate you to thinking about, oh, I want to do the following analysis. Oh, I know the inside. I know what to do for my own task. So let's show a quick video to demonstrate how this can be used in the real world cases.
With just one click in Power BI, you can get a variety of potential insights, which are automatically discovered from your data. Here are the insights for shark attacks data. Each insight is presented with description and visualization. The insights could be correlations, outliers, trends, dominate factors, and more. Here is an insight telling you there is an outlier in yearly attacks data. You can click to see more. You can see year 1960 is an outlier in the data. To understand what happened in this year, by another click, you can get further insights related to this year. For example, here this insight tells me that spear phishing was the dominated activity in that year, which could be the reason for the outlier.
Okay, so although it just shipped this year, we already got many, many good feedback, and I think people find this very useful. We are going to do more. One of the things we're trying to do more is not more, of course, there are more insights, but it's really the way how we can use this auto insight. So this example show you, it's more like a push model. So they are actually, for each table, we can copy tens, hundreds, or even thousands of insights. And you need to really explore more to see what some of these insights is something I'm interested in looking into. And you can imagine, there could be the other mode is like a pool mode. And what's the best way to pool? Natural language. So we've done so much bar. Can we use natural language to pool kind of insight that we might automatically find and then pool according to my context? So next, I would like to invite my colleague, Eric, to come forward to show us a new project called AnnaTalk, exactly kind of using this natural language to pool the many of those insights, which is meaningful to me.
That we are trying to analyze. So with the AnnaTalk, what we have is a conversation interface on top of this data so that we can actually analyze data using natural language. So for example, we can ask the following question. Compare fatal and non-fatal attacks by year. So what AnnaTalk does is he says that here's the result. So he found the two charts, one's fatal, one's non-fatal over the year. And as you saw in the video earlier, there's actually an outlier around 1960 where the activities around shark fishing. So spear phishing. So we won't go into that in more detail. And then with the natural language, sometimes the questions can be ambiguous. So sometimes you can ask questions such as the following. Show me attacks in dangerous countries. Show me attacks in dangerous countries. Let's say you are planning for a vacation. So basically what AnnaTalk asks is, can you explain what do you mean by dangerous in dangerous countries? Because dangerous is a little bit ambiguous. So I can give AnnaTalk the following definition. So I say total fatal attacks greater than 100. And then AnnaTalk actually knows the difference between the two, right? So he actually knows that fatal attacks means that more than 100. So he has the concept of what's considered dangerous countries. So the United States actually happened to be the number one in terms of number of fatal shark attacks over the history. And now that you understand the concept of dangerous, you can ask other questions using the same concept. So show me attacks in dangerous activities by year. So now it knows the concept of dangerous is actually cumulatively over 100 fatal accidents over the years. So now it actually goes through the database and looks through all the different activities and find that swimming happens to be the most dangerous one. It actually has a lot of activity. And just like in Quick Insight, we actually can discover new insights in the database. So in this case, for example, it looks at gender and says that the result is that male actually dominated among the genders in terms of like accounting for 86% of the fatal accidents in swimming. So here's a quick demo of another talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric. And I think quick demo show you this think slow task. I mean, even though we show you some quick stuff, but this, if you really want to know, for instance, people were curious why spare fish not causing many fatal accident. Also, why there's a spike in 1960, but not quickly going down, all this stuff. And I bet you, there are a lot of this, you probably need to use, look at the other data set. For instance, I think I just quickly do some search. Indeed, in 1960, after 1960, there are a lot of environmental protection organizations trying to lobby for the regulation of the spear fishing. So today, spear fishing in U.S., particularly in the two big states, Florida and California, they indeed have a lot of regulation in terms of time of the year, the bagging, also the weight and all this stuff. So what I'm saying is, for anyone want to really understand the inside, really take action or doing some kind of report, those think slow tasks really involve the human intelligence and also the artificial intelligence to work together. That's always been the model, and this is also why it is so powerful. And then now I want to switch the gear, talking about some of the things which are more in a philosophical level. But first I want to say, I know AI get all this credit, also get all this blame. I mean, sometimes it may be totally unnecessary. The first thing I look at, there are three terms, AI, machine learning, and big data. I often told people, they look like three different terms, but they overlap, if it's not 100%, today it's probably 95%. So, and I think when people talk about AI, they talk about really the whole thing, the high-tech company, information company can offer. And even that, the AI really not capture everything even we say we want to do in AI. The people know about history of AI. What I learned in the 80s is completely different than what dominates today is AI. And then today's AI is really based on data. This is why I say the AI and the big data is a huge correlation. And I remember the speech community, the first one to say in the early 80s to say there's no data like more data. And then it's super useful, and I think no question about. And I think so AI, although there's a hype, they are truly useful. The big data are truly useful. But at the same time, if you start trying to, in the next couple of slides, trying to actually analyze what's the human intelligence, what's AI, if you think about this, I think human intelligence is a lot to do, not necessarily big data, actually to do with small data. One of the case improve is this year is a milestone year. We finally, humankind can barely observe the gravity wave, which is hypothesized by Albert Einstein more than 100 years ago. And I think this is the proof that 100 years ago, Albert Einstein has not mentioned big data, probably has no data. And how can he come up with this hypothesis, which turns out to be true, 100 years later, we can kind of barely prove, we observe it. So, and also, not to mention, if people study AI in the 80s, or AI is the heuristic, why we need a heuristic? When you don't have data, when you don't have enough data, what's your intuition, right? That's the thing which is about human intelligence. And that doesn't mean data is not important. Data always important. And then that's really the some of the difference. And then one thing I want to share with you, that this is the cover of Time magazine in 1950. So people need to understand what is 1950. 1950, I think you can use two hands to count number of computers in the whole world, because we just get out of the World War II, right? Of course, they are Manhattan Project. And then there's something called Mark III, which is really the successor of the Manhattan Project. And then which is really just dawn of the computer, right? And then at that time, already people worry about the computer will be smarter than us. Human beings is really very strange creation, right? We never worry about building big muscle, like a big car, big airplane. But we only worry about we build something which can be smarter than us. So I will elaborate more. But this is really ironic. I mean, that we worry this since 1950. Which, if you know the historical perspective, in 1950, there's not even the term AI is not even there yet. Because this year is the 60 years anniversary of the AI, the term be coined by John McCarthy in 1956. So before AI, the term is there, people already worry about superintelligence. So let's look at what is intelligence. So I think at least there are four different layers. The first layer I call it capability. In this layer, there's no disagreement. Just like a computer, how many megahertz, what's the RAM, how big is the RAM, how big is the SSD, how big is the hard disk space, right? That's capability. I think that's easy to understand. But going down to the next level, intelligence, or I use the word intelligence, I think the definition has changed over time. I remember my first intelligent TV is in the 70s. It's when I went to my friend's house, they are rich enough to buy a Zenith TV with a remote control. When you have remote control of the TV, at that time, exactly called intelligent TV. In a sense, it's indeed intelligent. You want to change the channel, you just press a button, you don't need to go there to click. By now, of course, people think it's ridiculous. But if you think about smartphone, when the smartphone category came up in the 2000, there's no AI in there. We call it a smartphone. And then we call the other stuff arithmetic, right? So people used to be compute very fast. I remember there are even abacus. People can do abacus, can do the computation very fast, be considered very intelligent. Today, no one thinks that way, right? And I think the chess and Go, I'm sorry to mention that. You look at particularly the chess, you use the exhaustive search. Don't you think there's an analogy between the way the chess or Go play or similar to how can you get to the more decimal point for a square root of 2, right? So I think this intelligence stuff will change over time. It will continue to be that way. And then you go to the next level of creativity, judgment, right? That's that type of, I call it intellect, right? Which is even today, I don't think the AI is even going to that level yet. And not to mention wisdom, right? Oh, a lot of time you go to a coach, he or she say something which is totally, I mean, and then make you suddenly realize some certain thing, the guru, all this wisdom, and you feel inspiring, right? Or the coach, they didn't say anything. They basically just function as a mirror. And at the end, you say, oh, what's the wisdom, right? Or in Asia, the Zen, right? Nothing, right? You ask me anything, I told you nothing. That's really can be considered very the wisdom, full of wisdom. And I don't even know what it is, right? So not mention how can we build a machine with wisdom. And then in a computer Turing machine, I think the one thing is certainly very very the anything can be computed, algorithm can be computed by Turing machine, right? But people don't realize this algorithm actually come from human, or even the definition of human machine. It's a Turing machine. The algorithm always come from human. And then today, there's no algorithm can produce a new algorithm to solve a new problem. It's not intended, right? So that's something really we should think more. And even data, is data a critical intelligent component? On one hand, it is, because we always say, this guy know a lot, right? Because he had a lot of information, he had a lot of data. But there's another extreme case. Let me use the inside trading, right? I mean, everyone all want to invest, all want to make a lot of money. And one strict phone called inside trading. When you have some certain information, you are not supposed to do that. And then not only that, someone who has the inside information, so they make a lot of money, do you think this guy is smart? No, it's opposite. You even put this guy into the jail, right? So is data a critical intelligence component? I don't know. I mean, it's more a question than an answer. And then now, if we look at the human brain, and then I know the human brain is very complicated, but so right now, mostly we associate the so-called, on the left-hand side, the skill we have, we know about, we so-called the left brain, right brain. The left brain is more logical, sequential, analytical, objective, and then it's more like really, all this is really associated, rational, reality, practical, pattern recognition, math and science, and right brain to do with this intuition, random, more synthesizing rather than analytical. So seems like the even our brain has really two sides of the coin, and then so I think let me define what I mean algorithm. Right, I would define algorithm in a broader case. I would say algorithm is a step by step set of operation to solve a problem. And then what is the creativity? Based on this definition, I would define creativity as the ability to come up with a new algorithm to solve a new problem or solve an existing problem with a better performance, right? That will be my definition of the creativity. And then, so now, let me use an example to illustrate my point. Let's say you want to do summation of 1 to n. So there are at least two algorithms. One is the brain dead in the calculation, just do 1 plus n. The other one is a Gauss. I think it's a known urban agent. The Gauss bring this question to his teacher. His teacher Gauss is too smart. So the teacher will say, oh, this time ask Gauss to actually pass the summation of n to 1 to n, so we'll take Gauss at least an hour to compute. But Gauss came back probably in second to say, I know the answer. Of course, by now we know it's the n times n plus 1 divided by 2. So the reason I'm using this example is today, if we use this smarter algorithm to compute 1 to n, versus computer using the dumb algorithm just to plus 1 to n, who will win? I guarantee machine will win because the ability of the computation the machine has. So anytime when we compare a task between human and computer, we always forgot something. It always has two components, algorithm and computation. And given human has no chance to compete in computation with the machine, then I think you really need to think this problem deeply. For instance, the AlphaGo. AlphaGo, there's a bunch of people come up with the algorithm. No matter how, I know it's very smart, they say it's very smart, but the algorithm comes from a set of people. And they use the tens of thousands of machines to do the computation. Compete with the poor guy, Mr. Lee, who actually need to come up with the algorithm himself, also need to do computation himself on his brain. And then given he actually even won 1 out of 4, even has some chance to win some other game, I can actually have a hypothesis his algorithm most likely still better than this AlphaGo algorithm. Because kind of I use a similar analogy of this 1 plus n. So I think that's why I want people to think. And in terms of algorithm, it's not just this hard problem. Even I also want to use the real world example, which most of us probably has the experience. When we teach our kids or teach our students some certain concept or some certain formula, some certain algorithm, often the time, some particular standard way, the best way to teach, people just don't get it. And based on our understanding of that student, and we find other way to explain the same thing, and suddenly they get it. And I would say that's a new algorithm, right? Because you really change something, right? You can say your solution is the best, the standard way, but the people cannot understand. This is actually also very critical. Right now, people talk about AI mostly a black box. They cannot come up with a way to explain why. And a lot of times, come up with the way to explain why is very important to get someone convinced, can get someone understand, so people can take on to actually do more. And I think the way to actually let people understand, let people convince itself, it's a new algorithm because you solve the thing you cannot, which is not there before. So So I think that at the end, what is computer? Computer is just the best left brain, like the stuff, the logic, the computation, blah 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 blah, all this stuff. So two things. Competing with computer for computation is hopeless, right? And this is why I say every time I actually view things really differently than most people or most things they report in the media. Every time when someone claims they are something machine beat human, and every time, every single case, I actually think, oh, humans are damn smart. Because not all of these tasks involve the computation step. Given we are so bad compared to machine in terms of computation, if a human still has the chance to compete, I think human must be damn smart. And I think if you look at this, human's brain, right plus left, is what we often say, it's a bold hypothesis, and then you careful verify. And I think this will be the relationship and the 共进化, the co-evolution between human and the machine for the foreseeable future. And then I think I also want to talk about this AGI, weak AI, and the strong AI. But before that, let me show you a Chinese rune. Jiang Xie, which is a philosopher. He's not a computer scientist. He's a more philosopher. This is something he came up with in 1980. Let's see
the Chinese
quick
rune.
Video.
Can a machine ever be truly called intelligent? American philosopher and Rhodes scholar John Searle certainly can. In 1980, he proposed the Chinese Room thought experiment in order to challenge the concept of strong artificial intelligence, and not because of some 80s design fad. He imagines himself in a room with boxes of Chinese characters he can't understand and a book of instructions which he can. If a Chinese speaker outside the room passes him messages under the door, Searle can follow instructions from the book to select an appropriate response. The person on the other side would think they're chatting with a Chinese speaker, just one who doesn't get out much. But really, it's a confused philosopher. Now, according to Alan Turing, the father of computer science, if a computer program can convince a human they're communicating with another human, then it could be said to think. The Chinese Room suggests that however well you program a computer, it doesn't understand Chinese, it only simulates that knowledge, which isn't really intelligence. But then sometimes humans aren't that intelligent either.
So, for people doing AI, what Jiang Xie described in Chinese Room is so vivid. It's basically the mainstream AI today. No understanding, it's a black box. Right, and they actually will pass Turing test. This is one part of the reason Jiang Xie actually bring up this Chinese rune experiment is to challenge the Turing test is not true human intelligence. Right, human intelligence we understand using the machine translation example. How do human do a translation? We understand the semantics and we paraphrase, which is not exactly what machine translation is doing today. The machine translation is just like a Chinese room, basically just doing some pattern recognition and move things and then let people be kind of simulate the intelligence. And that's in this regard, this stuff is called weak AI. So weak AI has two definitions. One definition is without understanding, basically just simulate the intelligence. And then the other definition, weak AI, is so-called expert system or today's system. If you build a Go player, it can only play Go. If you build a image recognition, you can only do image recognition. The weak AI is actually quite strong because those domains we so-called expert system. And then strong the other thing called strong, so sometimes weak AI also called narrow AI. And then the strong AI is basically say human. Even though we are not this expert, that expert, but we have a general intelligence. So this is called AGI. So the strong AI is really not that strong because each area we probably weak, but altogether we have general intelligence. And of course, the other definition of strong AI is you have understanding, right? You truly understand, right? That stuff. Understand means if someone actually uses a vulgar word, asks you to translate, and they kind of point to you, you first will feel anger, and you translate. Right, and then today you ask machine to do translation, you will never anger. There is no emotion. And then so the if you go one step further, this understanding, there are neurologists, philosopher to study this, right? What is the consciousness? What is mind, right? And then I think right now most people believe the mind and the body are together, right? And it's not cannot be separated, right? There's a and then the consciousness is only belong to some very small set of the living things, right? Not to mention machine is not a living thing. How can they have a consciousness? And I think there's a lot of debate, but another book I actually recommend is by the professor in Yale, Professor Gennetier, The Spectrum of Consciousness. Something I find also very interesting, the reason I want to mention this, seems like consciousness has a huge correlation to creativity. Let me explain what I read out of his book. So he kind of separate two spectrum. One is high spectrum, the other low spectrum. So high spectrum means you can concentrate. When you wake up with a good night of sleep, with some coffee, and then also the good breakfast, you can concentrate. You can do a lot of this the number crunching work. So that's called high spectrum. Low spectrum is, after the afternoon without the coffee, you might actually fall asleep. Do you fall asleep or during the daydreaming? Or sometimes you catch a cold, you cannot concentrate. That's called low spectrum. And what we find out in the history, we know the Beethoven came up with the Ninth Symphony after he completed deaf and the blind. And then Van Gogh, in the late year, he cut his left ear and then he came up with some of the most beautiful painting. And then in those moments, most likely they are in low spectrum. But why they can come up with those creativity? And not to mention, I think there's a famous chemist called Kekler, and then he vividly say how he came up with his the structure of benzene. It's during his sleep. He actually dreamed some kind of snake, and then really had the hexagon. And then he go back to when he wake up, he go back to his laboratory, then he test and verify, then he come up with the structure of the benzene, which is a huge impact to the organic the chemistry. And then also, even we, normal people, a lot of time you're trying to remember something, for think slow, not think fast. Some of our memory you can think fast. You actually, the recital, you say it out. But a lot of time, something happened in the long past, you don't remember. But a lot of time, maybe you have some drink, you're drunk, or you are sleeping, suddenly you come up with. What is that? I think one of the creativity we have is you really find the analogy between two things, which they are not looks very obviously similar. But maybe, just maybe, when you are in low spectrum, those things used to be very distinct. But when you are in low spectrum or in your sleep, you find some correlation. Vaguely, these two things are similar, and then you apply that, and you come up with the innovation. So I'm not saying that you really need to be low spectrum to have a creativity, but seems like that's not necessary you have a high spectrum to have a creativity. So the mind and the consciousness may be to do a lot with our creativity. And so this weak AI, strong AI, and also earlier I have a challenge. Can you come up with algorithm that can actually come up with new algorithm to tackle a new problem you are not designed for? If you want to do that, if you can do that, you're basically a general problem solver. And we know there's no such thing. It's very small. The people try in the past, but only two methods I know today. One is the enumeration, and then but it becomes a combinatory problem. Then you need to, of course, people say, if NP equal to P, I can solve a big class of the problem. But yet, I think most people think NP probably will not equal to P. Then you say, well, you give up on that. What is our general problem solver? I would say it's random trial error. But this randomness is, you can say on negative side, you say random. On positive side, you say heuristic. You say intuition. What is this intuition, right? It seems like it has a lot of correlation to our consciousness, our mind. And then don't forget, you need always bold hypothesis. Then you actually the careful verify is correct or not. So I think we don't understand ourselves enough. Maybe we never figure ourselves. Don't even mention. Can we come up with a creative mind? And then of course people talk about the dangers of AI. I also think it's by and large we just don't need to worry. I think the one is the AI today, any piece of system always human behind to program it. So brain the human, don't brain the technology. And it's similar. Airplane is a good thing, but the terrorists can take airplane to cause the mass destruction. And then you brain airplane? No, you brain the people. And then people also worry about singularity. I kind of show one side of singularity. For machine to compete with human on the most valuable thing, creativity, we don't need to worry about. At least I haven't seen any sign. I think it would be interesting research the issue. The other thing also, the singularity, the other aspect is once technology go into a place which has the most law, and then so suddenly every problem got solved, and then you can have this exponential progress. I also think I actually very skeptical about that view, because algorithm, I understand the most law in chips, but most law in algorithm, when you solve a very hard problem, the next hard problem you don't even know when you will solve. It's getting harder. I don't think there can ever be a Moore's law. You solve a hard problem, then you are closer to all the hard problems. And then where are we from? Where is the Big Bang theory? The universe come from? I think a lot of this, I just don't see how this singularity can happen. Suddenly we solve everything. And everything we know, even we mentioned, if one day to solve the unknown is a part of the reason human, the aspiration for human being to continue forward. If one day really we know everything in the universe, that certainly is the end of war as we know it. And then I think I mentioned John McCarthy, like 60 years ago in the Dartmouth, he coined the term AI. I think people ask him, when you think we can build a machine has the total intelligence of a human? I think John's answer is 500 to 500 years. So I'm sorry, I must say, well, by the way, John McCarthy is my advisor, Raj Reddy's advisor. So I must say since we know it's not 5 years, already 6 years passed, I think probably closer to 500 years. So that's how I view. So this is why I think I personally believe the AI, this artificial, the A could mean augmented intelligence. It's really a human plus machine equal to Superman. We don't need to compete with the machine. Machine also don't like to compete with us. It's really human plus machine. So here's my summary. The task requires thinking fast, will be done by machine. It's already happening. In the future, will be even more. And then for the things you need to think a little bit slower, the computer are improving, can soon tackle more complicated tasks which you need to be done over and over again. Also, you have ability to collect a lot of data. Even for that type of think slow problem, I think computer can do it. And I think we will be very happy. Remember, when these things can be done over and over again, I think everyone will find it boring eventually. So we are very happy that machine to take care of that. But in our society, the most valuable thing related to empathy, creativity, judgment, the example I just made, should Microsoft acquire LinkedIn, those kind of think slow tasks will always be very challenging for machine to make decision for us. It will be challenging for us too. But we will learn and adapt the new power of machine by AI, just like a Power BI, whatever Power BI can help us, we will take it. So we can help us to make a more informative decision. So we human plus machine will become Superman solving the think slow task. So here's my talk. Thank you very much. 감사합니다.